I think if we could help people reclaim the spark, why did you go into medicine to begin with? You know, and always have that spirit in the room. It, you know, in conventional places, big hospitals, for example, that's gotten buried somewhere with the rush and the bustle. And yeah, there's reasons for it. There's too much pressure.
You're listening to Menders with clinical psychologist and leadership consultant, Dr. Nicola DePaul. Each week, get a dose of real-world inspiration from free-thinking leaders, top clinicians, healthcare innovators, and myself. Looking for quick fixes or standard management tools? Try someplace else. Motivated to maximize the resilience and diversity of your team, sustain your momentum as a leader, and transform your healthcare system? Welcome to Menders. Welcome to Menders. Today we have Adele Wong. And Adele, you're an integrative health provider. You're also a mentor for professional people who are struggling with anxiety and physical manifestations of stress. And in your current practice, you work with a lot of healthcare providers. So I am so delighted to have you on Menders today. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm excited. Thanks for having me. This is an important conversation. Especially right now.
Absolutely. And I'm so thrilled to just really do some thought exploration with you today. We were kind of chatting about our goals for today and thinking about what would be fun and important to create space for. So I'm really thrilled. And I wanted to just have you introduce yourself in a little bit more depth so people have a sense of who you are, where you're coming from, and then we'll dive into more of your work as well.
Sure. Well, I have been working with, hundreds or probably thousands of people around the world around things like stress, anxiety, purpose. And I was in an integrative medical office for 5 years and had most of the staff, the providers, as clients. I was brought in to work with the patients originally. Well, actually, it kind of was both ways. I had the physicians were seeing me privately, and they got so much better results in their own health with burnout, anxiety, that they then had me coming in working with the actual patients. And we discovered that this model of combining what you're doing, for example, what I do, which is not just cognitive, but it's also the inner wellness. That is so important right now. It's probably more now than ever because of what's happening in the world. So we were able to see amazing improvements, not just in the patients that came to see us, but the nurses that I was working with, the physicians. They were happier, they were healthier, and better able to serve their communities, which I think is the way we want to go. I mean, if we're really serious about happier and healthier patients, it's got to start somewhere. You know, you can't be from this empty place. And so if the provider can carry some of that in the air, it doesn't have to be a lecture of, hey, you need to sleep more, you need to drink more water, like that kind of, not that kind of thing, but imagine a physician who, or a nurse who's genuinely feeling good about her life, about her purpose, what she's doing. She loves what she's doing. Patients can feel that. And it's like, oh my God, I love coming here. I already feel fed in the room. And we haven't even started talking, but you're treating me like a human. And let me open up a little bit more about what's going on with me. And there's actually more of a soul to soul connection. Which, oh my God, the providers were so much happier working in this way versus a way where you've got the EMR or you're just typing notes into that and just asking people about their symptoms. And so we were able to create a model that was truly revolutionary in the Atlanta area. We had people driving in for, you know, hours away to come see us. So I'm very excited about what you're doing with patients and this conversation with healthcare providers. It's got to start with us. It really does. So that's my long and short answer. Not sure if that makes any sense, but yeah. So the techniques I use, a lot of there's spiritual inquiry, there's energy work, there's stress reduction. I mean, there are a lot of blah, blah, you know, technical tools, but what is the end result is what I'm more interested in. If we can create happier, healthier, more on purpose people, whether it's providers or your patient base, everybody's happier. The amount of pain meds you need, anti-anxiety meds, you know, people's bodies recover faster. We're all happier for less money in faster time. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. So something you said really caught my attention, which was, you know, the patient walks into the room and they're already feeling nourished by the interaction with the clinician before a single word has been said. So, I mean, flesh that out for me. I would love to hear, how do you work with clinicians to empower them to create that kind of space and connection? Because that is not what our typical experience is.
It's not. And we can be really honest that right now the healthcare systems are under such duress and there's so much that clinicians have no control over, whether it's the funky scheduling system or this EMR. People are working under conditions that are just ridiculous. And I was fortunate enough, like I don't proclaim to be able to solve the problems for the entire healthcare system. I can speak to what I saw was useful, that the model that I was working in integrative medicine, these were physicians that had made a conscious decision to leave the standard model. Not everyone's able to do that. We're just going to be real with people, but they had done, a lot of times they were working with me, like they're getting ready to launch. They're still working at a large hospital organization or something. But they had made a decision. They said, you know, the way that I am working with patients is just draining my soul. I did not go into medicine to work this way. I was going to be helping people. I'm a healer at heart. And the amount of moral injury I'm having to do on a daily basis, because, you know, I'm under such pressure, you know, it's like a factory trying to see as many people. So I can speak to the people who did a lot of inner work to make that decision to try a different model. And the model we had was, what is the technical term for it? I'm sure the business model people have a word for it, but it's kind of the boutique or something. Concierge, I can't remember the name of it, but these physicians had decided, okay, we're going to do things drastically different. So you could already see just that decision alone allowed an influx of creativity that had just been bottled up for so long. And I was in there and we were brainstorming, how can we best serve these patients? Like, because no one person has the answer. And so a lot of this was physicians letting go of the control that they had to know everything, right? That the nurses would share more than they would in a normal office. But that's very hierarchical, right? It was much more of a team. So sometimes we had to tell the doctor, hey, you don't know everything. Did you know that this patient is going through a horrendous divorce and can't sleep? Let me work with her to calm her down before you prescribe whatever, you know? And so we had a model that worked and physicians felt like they were learning themselves. What a relief to not have to know everything. And then, of course, I was working with them privately, you know, off the premises, and they would share things with me like they wanted to get to know their patients better. Well, you know, isn't that possible? But sometimes they felt very nervous around people, the perfectionist vibe, and that was also showing up in their marriages, at home. So there was much more of a growth model as people that then percolated into how the business was run. We had like, what, a 6 or 9 month waiting list of people for patients to get in. We had no time. Like, and it was not seeing 5 people at once. You know, the scheduler was, we're not booking 5 people for the same time slot. So patients didn't come in, get irritated and have to sit in the waiting room for 45 minutes. We didn't do any of that. So my impression after working there for 5 years was I felt like this was a model of healthcare everybody wanted, not just the patients, but the providers. And we had to step outside the standard mold. Now, I'm keeping it real. Not everyone is able to do that. There are limitations on the way the revenue model has to be different. So you have to bring in people that understand a different way. It's not for everyone. And, you know, I don't know if it's something that can be scaled, like that you could see hundreds of people. Yeah, you know, it's much more of a smaller, intimate model. And it worked for us. There was me. There were two nurse practitioners, two and a half physicians. Yeah, one was there in and out. We had physical therapist who came in. There was a very good medical massage therapist who understood post-surgery stuff. We had acupuncture, we had nutraceuticals, we had people who understood better eating, yoga, all that. So that was a model we had. Hope that's making sense.
Yeah. I guess a theme that you spoke to and a theme that I've been hearing recently is just being willing to step out of the frame or even to become aware of what is our frame. And then how do we start to move out of that? And how do we start to change that?
Exactly.
So one of the things in my own practice that I find really powerful that lets me scale some of what I do is doing things in community or in a group setting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for me, at least in my personal experience, that kind of speaks to some of the things that you're talking about, because it takes the pressure off me as the expert. You know, sure, I might bring in education or a skill or, you know, some structured agenda that I have, but I really see the learning as taking place in those relationships between the people who show up. And
yeah.
In that kind of intimate experience of being together. And for me, it is so powerful. And it is also the most energizing time that I have as a clinician. It's just, you know, it's like setting the table and then watching people eat this beautiful, nourishing meal.
Mm.
And I can just kind of sit back and eat it with them. And there's so much less that I need to do in those moments. It's just so powerful. So.
Yeah, I think if we could help people reclaim the spark, why did you go into medicine to begin with? You know, and always have that spirit in the room. It, you know, in conventional places, big hospitals, for example, that's gotten buried somewhere with the rush and the bustle. And yeah, there's reasons for it. There's tremendous pressure, but no one's actually enjoying themselves. We're trying to do the best job we can under incredibly difficult situations, and we don't have the time for self-care or even interacting with each other. You know, we barely know each other. And, you know, some of the providers I've been working with lately privately are evaluating even what kind of medicine they want to do. I was speaking with what one of my clients that I was working with recently. She was an emergency room nurse, and she was a nervous wreck every day. She would go home crying, just sick to her stomach. She didn't realize she's a very sensitive person placed in an environment that is anything but peaceful. You know, people were coding, all kinds of things. And she was terrified she would make an error and would kill somebody. So she wasn't sleeping. Like, oh my God, you know, did I follow the proper procedures? Did I record everything in the system? I mean, this wasn't working for her. And we, after doing some work, we determined she loves people. She loves medicine, but she doesn't really like the ER. So like at that point, she didn't know, should I just stop being a nurse? Like leave medicine altogether? Or so we had to pull apart. Medicine is broad, you know? Maybe you would drop, because I have had ER physicians that love the chaos, right? But I said, maybe you would be happier. You know, we did some work. What kinds of people are you most enjoying? What kind of lifestyle are you happiest? And we determined you might be a lot happier working in a pediatrician's office, right? Set hours, working with frantic mothers who are beside themselves because Johnny, you know, whatever, and she loves them. And so that's what she's doing now. So the good thing is we kept a good nurse from getting burnt out because she, the way she was going, she wasn't going to make it. And so she was seriously thinking at age 27 to give up being a nurse. But now she's thriving and she just got married and all this. And it's a much more manageable way of the calling, the type of medicine. Now, sometimes people think that providers are in the right zip code, but maybe not on the right street or house number. You like medicine, but is the ICU your favorite jam? Or are you happier in more concierge service? You know, and people have never sat down and thought about it. What fills me? What kind of team do I want to work? Do I want to be locum tenens where I never know anybody, but I love the trap? And so I love helping people with this because we can't afford to lose more good practitioners. We can't, you know? And why are so many people leaving the field? It's because of burnout. There's not enough support to help people with the overwhelm. Is it the type of nursing you're doing? Is it the boss that's driving you nuts? Maybe you need a different environment. You know, maybe there's some teamwork with the nurses that, you know, we don't know, but I don't know if that's making sense, but it's so individual. It's hard to just generalize.
Yeah. So how do you help people reconnect with that sense of calling or vocation? You know, what they really deeply love? Because I do think there's a lot of separation, you know, from ourselves in healthcare.
Absolutely.
So how do you help people
absolutely do that work? Yeah, absolutely. What I'd like to do is, and there's some things that I'm pretty good at in terms of getting down to the human that's beneath the profession. Because if we don't go deep enough, it's just like, oh, you know, what parts of nursing do I like? It's still very, like, what color is your parachute oriented? What's y'all's? And there's nothing wrong with that. But if I dig down deep enough, you know, what really fills your jam that has nothing to do with nursing or nothing to do with being a doctor? And like, if we could peel that off, then people can relax because there's, otherwise, they're still trying to save their career. Like they're in that fix it model. I'm like, let's just get you, take off the white jacket, you know, put away all the stuff you use and let's just be human again. You know, where in your day or in your life do you feel the spark the most? And, well, I don't know, you know, and there's an exploration and usually it hints at what people are naturally drawn to. What kinds of things do you like reading? Or what's your guilty pleasure on YouTube or on TV? Like there's a natural pull when they're not thinking about work and there's something there, you know, like for example, I have an ER doc. He is naturally drawn to like the stuff on Netflix. That's like the most diabolical. You know, the shadow side and people. And I love that stuff. I geek out on that stuff because he was so interested in what makes people tick. That was his jam, right? Here he is, the ER doc. And what he was struggling with at that time was, I like being the ER doc, but what I don't like is I never know how people are doing after they leave the ER bay. Like, are they okay? Like, because they're not allowed to have the follow-up and all that stuff. So now he's exploring, is there a way, you know, in the current model, maybe not, but he discovered he would be happier if he had more continuity of connection with people. He's very interested in people. You know, the nurse that I was working with loved kids. Love kids forever, you know. And I said, well, what's it like at the park? You know, she loved talking to moms about their babies. She would do it all the time on her blog. But she could do more of that. Really? Yeah. So there's already a hint at where people naturally shine that has nothing to do with their board exam or even their specialty. And similarly, you know, some people, they're overwhelmed with too much people contact. It doesn't feel good to them. They would rather be a little bit more private. that's fine. So you went into being a doctor, but you don't really like the too much contact. You might be happier in a more research. And so there's that kind of stuff, if that makes sense. But I think there's a way to find the real human before all the job started. And that's fun. That's a lot of fun. You know, I have another client who was writing a novel on the side, loves wine, loves, like, you know, and so he's working on a novel and he needs a way that work doesn't get in the way of him writing a novel, because eventually he's saying, you know, I've been a physician for 15, 20 years. I'm getting ready to transition out, but I don't know what that is yet, but I love writing my book. So we need to hold all parts of people, because you're not just a doctor. My goodness. You have to have a family if you want one, a decent life. Yeah. And I would rather that those pieces inform the provider rather than the provider just going home exhausted and then taking it out on their family. I have a lot of providers who lived in that. Dad was a doctor. Dad came home exhausted every day and mom did everything. You know, so we're rebuilding it. What is that? Doesn't have to be the way you do it. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I love that. So what do you think changes for people, like on an internal physiological level, or just,
oh my God,
you know, that really deep human level, when they go through that shift from working in a setting that's not life-giving or sustaining to them to really reclaiming their full humanity and celebrating what, like, who they are in their deepest moments?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Once people get a whiff of that, there's no stopping, right? It starts to build momentum. It's like a plant that leans towards the sun. You know, growth starts to happen. I think one reason why providers are so burnt out is that there's no growth. It's a saying, day in, day out, there's no room for the poetry of life or the dance between humans. And they're being relegated to this robot. And it's not just in medicine. It's in other fields too, but it's very loud in medicine. And part of the reason why I think it's extra loud in medicine is we've had a culture that just sort of expects that this is normal. Well, you're a doctor, therefore you should know everything. Suck it up. Keep your feelings to yourself and just save me. Well, that's not a very human way to heal anyone. First of all, I don't heal you. I'm here to assist you, but you need to take some responsibility. And so there's a lot of humanness in, you know, not following what is suggested, and that frustrates doctors. And that relationship between the physician and the patient needs more work many times for it to really bloom. And physicians aren't equipped to have those conversations because nobody's done it with them. Once people have sat with somebody else, they feel so much more rich and able to respond to a patient who's being twitchy, you know? Otherwise, everything feels intolerable. Yeah, I don't know if that's making sense, but there is a certain poetry to life. There's a dance that can be reclaimed. You know, I was in an ER recently. I had to go there for somewhere else. And I saw these nurses doing a little mini dance in the hallway, rocking out to something major. And they were all laughing. I'm like, I would say, bring it. And they were like, you know, I'm like, what? You know, bringing life to places that, if anything, we need even more life in the hospital, not less. Because that's what patients are short of. You know, you're already depleted, right? So I understand we need, you know, sterile environment and all that stuff, but my goodness, can we fill it with something in the air?
Yeah. Beauty and joy, and poetry,
stories, or maybe just sitting down and say, hey, how are you doing? And sitting with people's terror of their illness. It's terrifying. And a lot of physicians don't know how to do that. It makes them very uncomfortable. They look at the chart, you know, but there is a part of them, I can feel it. They would love to spend more time with that person, but they don't know how, but they want to, but they don't know how. So there's retreating into what I know. And, you know, so it's a very nuanced situation, but I feel passionately that if physicians had more places to be filled themselves, because they think they should know it all by now. There's this idea that, well, I'm the doctor, so I should just know self-care. I should just know all this. I'm like, our culture, especially med school, where's med school or internship? Were people encouraged to really be real? It's just not encouraged. In nursing, there's this idea of why you attend to the patients. There's a little bit more. But why are all the nurses burnt out? Like, nothing is being sourced in a way that's sustainable. So that's why I've been so busy. Because I love this stuff, right? If I can get the ER doc to jump up and down with me and dance to some crazy TikTok thing, and he's so happy, I've done my job. And he thinks we're just, there's a reason I'm doing it. There's a strategic reason for the body, the mental health, and it's fun. So yeah, I'm very strategic in what I'm doing. There's always a reason why I'm inviting people in it. And then they have more of themselves and they don't forget that. Yeah. I don't know. It's very nuanced. And of course, I know what's happening in the body. There's more rest and digest. There's less fight and flight. There's less cortisol, blah, yeah, all that. We need happier providers to produce happier patients.
Yeah. So I'm reading this book called Rituals for Work. And the whole premise is to help people go through like a prescribed set of actions that maybe they come up with or that they do in community, but that involve physical movement and bringing, you know, I guess the connection from the head to the heart, essentially.
Yeah.
And then helping people connect both with themselves, with their team, and then with their larger community. And it's intended for organizations.
Wonderful. I love that it's community focused, because I think a lot of doctors, they still kind of isolated. Like, I should just figure this out. I know I should go to yoga. I know I should do this, because that's what they're telling their patients. But the missing element, you have no community. Neither do your patients. That's the secret no one talks about. Our culture is missing this. So when doctors asking the patient about their support network, but the doctors are then, we're talking about stuff we don't actually know enough yet. We just know intellectually. So if doctors can have some way to, like what you're doing, a community with their colleagues, it's to strengthen those bonds. So it's not just one person that's going to see the patient. It's a team. It's a community channeled through you, which is lovely.
So how do you think physicians or nurses or healthcare providers can start to transform their own connection with their community or, you know, reconnect with their spiritual communities, their families?
Yes. I'm seeing more and more of that. Thank God. You know, over the 5 years when I was in the integrative medical practice, we were the anomaly. People looked at us kind of funny. The medical board would look at our physicians kind of odd, like, because it was so different. But the results spoke for themselves. The results, we had the most difficult cases of patients. Patients that had tried everything else then came to us and were like, start with us first. It's less expensive, less invasive. Then do the hard medicine if you have to. But, you know, I'm happy to see that there has been an evolution. Could be better, but more and more physicians are starting to speak out. Lisa Rankin is an excellent example. I love all of her stuff. There are more. Who's the other guy? Z-Dog. There's some people on Facebook that are speaking out on this. And the more people who speak out, the more physicians join, the more people saying, yeah, our current system is broken. And so it's not one person who has the answer. It's a bunch of people willing to connect and say, hey, what's possible? And I think that's the best way to go. It's not finding the answer. It's joining more people that are interested and asking questions of what's possible. Then it's more of a group think tank kind of thing. Instead of, oh my God, I'm here, I've got to figure this out by myself. I think that's a great step. I think there are more and more voices, so physicians don't feel alone. And I think more people are starting to evaluate what kind of medicine do I want to stand for? Or if I'm going to stay with the current system, what are things that I can do to help me feel more human before I go in every day? Even that, personal responsibility, or they're little things. You're limited sometimes, but at least maximize what you can do. Work with someone. It doesn't have to be me, or work with a Nicola or somebody who can just help you fill in all the other stuff that doesn't get enough time, you know? So I don't have a simple answer because it's not a simple problem.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not simple. I guess reflecting on my own experience, you know, I was one of those clinicians who did the yoga and the mindfulness and all these things. And I really believe in those and I still practice them, but in a different way than I did when I was starting out and trying to fight burnout with the practice, not with the community. And so something that I started doing along the way, and I credit a good friend of mine for getting me into this, was actually like a communal gratitude practice.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine and I just share what we're grateful for in a voice message every day. And it is so powerful for me.
Oh my God, that's so simple and so rich. You know, burnout is because there's not enough new something coming in. Burned out, right? I depleted. So what can come in that feels fresh? A simple voicemail message, or maybe a poem, or maybe the whole staff does some new dance or whatever, you know. But burnout is because there's not enough creative expression and I'm not being able to be the full me. And we are all growing. So it's also recognizing that the medicine you're doing today, you're a different human than you were 10 years ago. By definition, if you're not growing inside, there's a static, stagnant ceiling that starts to happen. And this is also puzzling to some providers. They're like, why am I not juiced anymore? I'm like, well, because you've been doing the same thing for 15 years. Well, there's this idea that you've arrived, right? And then you just sort of do this till retirement. Not necessarily, unless you want to. You know, do you want to start mentoring up-and-coming physicians? That could be very rewarding for a seasoned physician to be a mentor. Oh, they love that because it's fresh. It's new. It's a connection with humanoids. Can I bring these people along so they don't screw up like I did? Or if you're, women, you know, people of color, oh my God, do they need help, right? So do something that you know makes an impact way beyond what we may know, but you feel it in your soul. So you could be a doctor for doctors that doesn't require a med. You're sort of listening and you're literally a doctor for doctors on a soul or energetic level. How fulfilling might that be? You're not going to get burnt out with that, right? So there are many ways. It's just people haven't thought about them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're so speaking my language. Like, for me, when I get together with, you know, with my trainees, my supervisees, or teams that I'm working with to try to improve their functioning, their communication, their well-being, like the level of energy I feel when I leave those meetings, it's like I can't sleep. It's just,
it's wonderful. And see that when people leave events like that, they are, in fact, back to the original question, how do people find who they are? Because that had nothing to do with their jacket or their, you know, all their device. They experienced something and they may not understand it, but it's vibrating in them on a level that no amount of certification training can reach or even, watch this webinar on good communication skills. Oh my God, people are yawning, right? Because it requires connection with people live. I mean, if you have to do it through some electronic mediums, But I think people come alive when they can just talk to each other. So it doesn't have to cost much, but there has to be a commitment. I need this in my life somewhere. And that's where sometimes there's a hesitation. There's a feeling of, should I, do I really, you know, because physicians aren't trained to think that way. Med school has done students a disservice. Everything is about, you know, making the grade or whatever. And then you don't understand why the patients you see are miserable, because there's not enough ways to connect with them. Yeah. But on a human level, I think we'll get there with more open conversations, with more leaders willing to admit they don't know everything, with more community ideas. Like I loved this gratitude idea that you came up with. Oh my God. That's something to look forward to every day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I had a physician come into my office recently and basically said, you know, I've invested 10 years in what I'm doing. I couldn't be more miserable. I haven't felt like myself in that decade. The only thing meaningful in my life is my dog. I'm not sure what to do next.
Oh my gosh. I've had clients like that. And oftentimes there's such shame. There's such embarrassment. And so I try to flip it and say, you're on the growth edge of your profession. If you are reaching out to me or like something like what you do, Nicola, these are really the bleeding edge, courageous ones. It's everybody else who's afraid, right? I don't even say seek help, because that sounds in the medical community, oh my God, they're broken. But what if it's, I'm on my growth edge. Oh, everybody wants to grow, right? It's flipping the model to, are you going to do what everyone else does? Or are you going to try something? And that usually kind of goes, oh, yeah. And that's what I want all providers to lean into. Be one of those that's on the growth edge to buck this crazy system and find a way that you can rock it out. And then they come alive. Like, yeah, I want that. The vision starts to build. Because if people come in thinking there's something wrong with me, I need to fix myself, I need to get over myself, there's no creativity. There's no inspiration. There's a lot of shame and embarrassment. That's what I see. So the first thing I do is flip it. You're one of the advanced thinkers.
I love that. That's so empowering.
Yes.
I think one of the messages I also hear from clinicians is like, I don't deserve to care for myself, or I don't deserve to feel better.
Where did that start?
I don't know, but it's terrible.
It's awful.
You know, but it's like this thought that, you know, if I'm doing those things, I'm dropping out or I'm harming my patient. But really the reality is like you're harming your patients now, and obviously not intentionally, but by not caring for yourself, there's no way you can create that nourishing relationship.
Yeah. This message is hard to get through to high driven. These are often people that, you know, were at the top of their class or worked hard their whole life. They hear that, but they don't really believe it. So sometimes I have to get a little crafty, and I'm looking for a way to get around their mind, right? And then I challenge them a little bit in a nice way. And I felt like just curious. How much of this do you think, maybe, possibly, might be sort of a, you know, what you've been pressured to believe in terms of an egoic way of being successful? No. You see that word ego, they're like,
yeah,
right, and we're just, right, and then they're like, yeah, you're right, you know, there's a part of me that thinks I should have it off, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, okay, and we just sort of bring that in, like, okay, well, you know, we can change that. Because what I've learned is just telling them that they're worthy doesn't go anywhere. It there's no vibrational change with that. They'll kind of go, yeah, you're right. And nothing changes. So you have to find some other ways to dance with that question, because it is the fundamental problem.
Yeah.
And there are creative ways to do it.
Yeah. So like making that journey, like helping.
Making that journey.
Deep sense of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at some point you have to get people out of the narrative of what they think is the problem. because if they could have fixed that, they would have. So I tell all my clients, I'm not interested in what you know already, because you're already brilliant. You've probably really thought about this. There's no real new insight I can give you. But I'm more interested on, like, if the narrative is floating at the top of the ocean, the waves, and sometimes they're storming and norming, and sometimes it's quiet. I'm not really that interested. I'm more interested in what's at the bottom of the ocean, because there's a place down there that doesn't move. It doesn't move when your mind is cranking about, you know, your patients or your family, or life is good, life is crappy. It doesn't move. But there is a part of you that's trying to emerge from the bottom of the ocean. That's the part I'm interested in. And it doesn't think. It doesn't have a narrative. It doesn't have a story. That's why it's so hard to access by yourself. So we have some other tools, which I use, that are not narrative driven.
Yeah. So what is it like for your clients to move out of that place of narrative into this unknowing or nonverbal space?
You really want to know. What I've discovered is that when physicians start doing this path, eventually they want to do what we're doing. They want to impact, well, many of them do. I'm not saying all of them, but many of them really want to know their patients at such a deep level. And some of them want to be coaches. You know, you've been a physician for 10, 15 years, but I find the most satisfaction in working with people deeply, because I did that journey and it just changed my life. And now I want to spread it to others, because they come into my practice and they're overwhelmed and on high blood pressure and all these meds. And I know what the problem is. I can't just give them another med. I need a syphilis. I enjoy that. It gives me meaning. I know I'm going to help their family. Oh my God, I want to go there. So I've had several, gosh, at least a dozen physicians that have made that transition. They didn't go in thinking, I'm going to leave medicine. And some of them still practice, but they do it in different ways. Either, like, there's one client, she's working, is she locum tenens? I can't remember, but like, she's in the office seeing patients 2 days a week. The other 3 days of the week, she's coaching other physicians. That to her is a lovely blend. My ER doc client, we've gotten him through some tremendous success. Oh my God, his life has changed. No, he wants to see coaching clients on the side on days he's not in the ER. Great. I mean, this is a natural progression. When people start coming alive, they want more of it. And it could be a different type of medicine, like the practice I was in. It could be, you know, 2 days working with, you know, Kaiser Permanente, whatever, and doing something else outside. There's so many possibilities, but it does transform people in a very positive way.
Wow.
And my physicians are usually much happier. The use of antidepressants not needed anymore. They've been embarrassed about that. You know, losing weight, more energy. They're not cringing at the thought of going into the hospital the next day. The kids are happier, because they got to know themselves better. And then, given this crazy system everybody's working in, small changes. How much can I actually change? Sometimes not a whole lot. So I have to, what's possible? Can I ask my boss for this and that? You know, everybody's navigating. Sometimes it's, I found a way. Sometimes it's a different type of medicine. Sometimes it's changing my work hours and setting boundaries. I don't like being on call, whatever. Sometimes it's cutting back and doing something else, like in a coaching model, the other days of the week, running your own solo boutique practice where you only see a certain type of patient. It's cash only. Thank you very much. You know, so much is possible now. It's exciting.
Do you run into change agents within those healthcare systems who are committed to staying in the system and bringing in transformation, or just starting to ask those questions in the system?
You know, that's a $64 million question. It's a difficult, very difficult situation. And a lot of this is just because of the way the payor payee, insurance, Medicare, it's broken. So we have to be realistic. Yes, we keep moving for change, but there's a lot of pressure to not change. I think everybody knows that. Everybody listening to this will know that. It doesn't mean that the administrators are bad people. It's possible they're totally clueless. It's possible. It's also possible there's not much they are able to do right now. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and we can't expect change overnight. So some people can't wait 10 years for things to change. Other people are like, well, I'm willing to hang in there for a little while. Everybody's different. But the system right now, it's unsustainable. You know, so you can only push costs around so far until, you know, and people are paid on certain criteria and they have to eat too. And yeah. So that's way beyond my pay grade. Yeah. I mean, I have ideas, but my goodness, you'd have to totally rework Medicare and the pharma and whew, you know, but I think if everyone did their part, more movement is possible, and it's starting to.
Yeah. Yeah. Bringing it back to what can we do to care for ourselves and connect with ourselves? And then, I mean, for me, the how do we change the whole system question comes down to something so much broader even than healthcare. Cause I think for me, it reflects our whole societal.
Absolutely. I think incremental change will take too long. This is just Adele speaking. But if someone asks me what is necessary to fix this, I am a little impatient. This slow change. I'm like, no, find a bunch of doctors that have a different vision. Find a business model that feels good. Take a chance and build something new. And you might not be able to accept Medicare. Are you willing to work on a cash basis? I mean, these are the things people have to sit with, you know? Try it, you know, because trying to push the river upstream, it's frustrating, you know. I don't know. I don't have the answer, but I think I would rather push for trying something new than trying to resuscitate a system that's just not working. Now, obviously, we still need to serve people, but I think there has to be some innovation going on, because right now everybody's relying on AI to do it. Oh, the latest technologies, that'll make doctors' lives easier for the providers, this and that. I say, no, all that's going to happen is that you're going to expect providers to see 20 people an hour instead of 10, because you can pack them in.
Yeah.
Right. It's the same model. You're just trying to improve a tool. Mm-hmm. But that's even more moral injury in terms of being able to sit with people.
Yeah. It's dehumanizing.
I mean, it's useful. I'm not saying these advances in AI can't be useful, but if the fundamental reason is to squeeze more out of the system, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So really early in my career, I was working in a public health leadership development program, and Johns Hopkins professor Ben Lazare, who is a wonderful human, was teaching one of the classes. And I still remember something he said, which was basically, if you put more money or investment into something that is broken, you just end up with a bigger problem. Because
yeah.
Money is just exploding the problem. It's not solving
it. It's not solving a problem. Yeah. I mean, radical change might be get paid on retainer. You know, some of these physicians that, hey, it costs, I don't know how much it is a month, and my job is to keep you healthy. And hopefully, I know I've seen you more than once or twice a year. But if you need me, boom, I'm there, and you have all my attention. If it's an hour, we go there. That's very satisfying, right? And there is a market of consumers that are interested in that. But, you know, people are still working that part out. And obviously, there are a lot of people who can't afford that. So we need different systems for different kinds of patients. It's a one system that's not serving anybody well. Yeah. I don't know what that model is called. Is it called boutique? I'm sure there's a word for it.
The direct care model.
Direct care. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if you decide to do that, a lot of physicians, I'm helping them with all of their oh, I can't do that. I'm not, you know, the whole entrepreneurship model of I'm a doctor. I don't do business. I'm like, well, if you want to go in this direction, let's not call it business. Let's call it leadership training. Because they think business is a very mercenary model, or there's almost this aversion. Like, if you're going in this direction, we've got to change your relationship with money to begin with. And so it's not so toxic to you. So that when you're figuring out dollars and cents in a way to meet what you need to feel abundant, you don't have to be a multi-billionaire, but, you know, is this sustainable? We don't know. So that's a lot more of the inner work that has to happen. Who are you? How are you with ideas of going alone on your own? Do you feel a victim of the system? That we have to get around that one too. Like, there's no way out. I'm just this cog, right? So these are the pieces that I work with, because they're rumbling in a lot of people's operating systems.
Yeah. Oh, I just love that. And I am so grateful people like you are doing that work.
Oh, it's so much fun. And just think of what's possible for our world. You know, maybe not in the next 2 years, but eventually, I hope we have a system that works better. I don't know. I don't know enough about the business end to speak to that, why different countries have different ways. And I know it doesn't seem like any country has it perfect. Okay. But we can learn from other models. I think sometimes in the US, there's a little bit of a, well, if it's not made here, it's not good. Like, you know, we only honor American ideas because we're the exception or whatever. But there are countries that are doing innovative things. We could learn a thing or two. You know, before we scream, you know, oh, this is socialized medicine. What does that mean? Like, what does that term really mean? And you ask 10 physicians or 10 providers, they'll have very different. We can't even agree on what that word means. It just means a different way of providing services. We don't have to be like them, but we might be able to borrow some ideas. You know, like I was getting some PT for a shoulder injury recently, and my therapist was pregnant, about to have her baby. And I asked her if she was going to get PT after delivery of the baby. And she said, yeah, and in Europe, it would be covered by insurance. But here, nope. Like, in Europe, they have the model that after you have a baby, PT is covered. Women recover faster. What a concept. But that's not done here. Right? And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, these ideas, they're just ideas. And I love ideas. I love what's possible. So this podcast, I hope, will reach people and inspire, give people ideas, creative. You don't have to agree with everything, but it's maybe something you can sit with and just play with what's possible.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you for being in that space. And I did just want to ask you one final question, which is what gives life to your life? Like, what is most delightful for you every day?
What lights me up every day?
Yeah.
I call it the poetry and dance of the moment. So sometimes it's with my dogs. Sometimes it's just, you know, seeing flowers. Sometimes it's a heartfelt conversation. Like, whatever's here, there's a certain richness in the moment. Oh my God. I love that. So yeah, that's what I strive to connect with at any moment, whether I'm with clients, in the office, on a podcast, because we're doing it right now. And it's so enjoyable, right? Because you don't know what the next moment's going to bring. And that's the freshness of life. And that stops burnout.
Wow. Oh, I love that. Thank you, Adele. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed this. I hope this is useful to people out there. You know, I just share what I know. And I know about like 2 drops of a whole massive universe of things. So I think your podcast will help a lot of people. I'm excited to share it with my community when it's out. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Menders. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. And don't forget to head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com to get started creating cultural transformation for your healthcare team today. Let's create transformation magic.